And now, before Democracy Now!, we have a little bit of time, so I thought I'd play for you an audio clip from a webinar from May the 14th that was hosted by the Step It Up Initiative, which is actually run by the National Association of Counties and some other folks, which I'm going to fill you in on before playing the clip. So just as a matter of background, congressional leaders committed to improving mental health services and public safety joined the National Association of Counties, NACO, and the Council of State Governments Justice Center on December the 9th, 2014, for a briefing on the new wave of national efforts to reduce the overwhelming number of people with mental disorders cycling through U.S. jails. The National Association of Counties Executive Director reports that the 3,069 counties across the country with a $500 billion a year budget each spend over $70 billion on justice and public safety and $70 billion on health care for citizens, oftentimes health care in American jails. About 8.5 million people a year become inmates in jails, and there are about 11.5 million visits, indicating that large numbers of people are paying more than one visit. A polling of their members, that is counties, to ask what percentage of people in jails had severe mental illness resulted in 25% saying they estimated over 60% of people currently in their jails met that criteria. Judge Lifeman from Miami-Dade County will discuss his efforts to successfully reduce incarceration on a recent National Association of Counties Step It Up webinar and why Orleans Parish should be taking notes. Judge Lifeman's proposal to reuse an abandoned psychiatric hospital as a one-stop-shop diversionary facility is underway. A great way New Orleans can also step up would be to readapt Charity Hospital as a one-stop shop for behavioral health and neurological research to anchor the biodistrict, transitional affordable housing, long-term inpatient psych care, and diversionary programs, as well as using a component of the building to house a consortium of organizations that would all work together on systemic challenges of mental illness, homelessness, workforce development, stigma, etc., to drive policy. 1 million square feet is too small. Like what is already happening in Baton Rouge, spearheaded by the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, the university's members of the community who are impacted, judges, the DA, the sheriff, the mayor, Department of Corrections, the coroner, physical and mental health providers, and policymakers and others need to come together now to implement meaningful reforms. The Miami model is the first of its kind in the nation. The charity idea expands on that model. And now I'll play for you a little bit of Judge Lifeman's talk on the May 14th webinar that is on the NACO website.
Serves as the Associate Administrative Judge in the Miami-Dade County Court Criminal Division, and he's also a Special Advisor on Criminal Justice and Mental Health for the Supreme Court of Florida. Amongst his many accomplishments, he is Chairman of the 11th Judicial Circuit of Florida's Mental Health Committee, Co-Chair of the Miami-Dade County Mayor's Mental Health Task Force, and he also serves on a statewide task force to improve Florida's mental health system. He's also a co-chair of the Council of State Governments and the TAPA Center for Jail Diversion, Judges, Criminal Justice, Mental Health Leadership Initiative, and a member of the National Leadership Forum for Behavioral Health. So we can tell that the judge really has a passion for this issue, and we look forward to hearing from him today about his interest in stepping up. Judge Lifeman?
Thank you so much, and I first want to thank the commissioner for her tremendous leadership in this arena, and we are thrilled. I'm here also representing the American Psychiatric Foundation today, and we're just thrilled to be teaming up with NACO and the Council of State Government because this is an issue that's been long overdue to be addressed, and I'm really confident with the partners that we have partnered up with that maybe finally we'll be able to help turn this around. Our project started about 15 years ago. It actually started one day when I was getting ready to come get on the bench, and I was approached by the public defender and state attorney in my courtroom, and they asked me to speak to a couple whose son was in jail on a case I was about to hear. The couple told me their son was brilliant. He'd gone to Harvard, had a late onset of schizophrenia, and was now recycling through the criminal justice system, and he was homeless. They also told me that he was a Harvard-educated psychiatrist, He used to work at our largest psychiatric hospital here in Miami, and due to his onset of schizophrenia, had ended up in the criminal justice system. It turned out to be a horrible situation in the courtroom. He had a full psychotic episode, and as a result of that case, it forced me to learn three very, very difficult lessons. The first lesson I learned that day is that Miami-Dade County, it turned out, had the largest percentage of people with mental illnesses of any urban area in the United States. 9.1% of our general population lives and suffers with a serious mental illness every day. That's about 180,000 adults and about 55,000 children. And when we talk about serious mental illnesses, we're generally talking about people with schizophrenia, bipolar, major depression, and PTSD. I also learned that this was not just a local problem, but it turned out to be a state and national problem as well. And as the commissioner already stated, there's about 2 million incidents of arrest involving people with mental illnesses each year. That translates to about 500,000 people with serious mental illnesses in jails and prisons on any given day in the United States, and another 850,000 people with serious mental illnesses in the community on some type of community control or probation. I think the third lesson, which maybe was the most difficult for us to learn, is that Miami-Dade's community mental health system, like every community mental health system in the country, are very fragmented, are very antiquated, do not necessarily use best science and best practices or medical research, and we're still relying on a system that was built 50 years ago when very few people with mental illnesses were actually in jails and prisons. Well, as a result of this situation that I had had with the psychiatrist, I was very fortunate in a way. Soon thereafter, the Policy Research Associates, who's one of our partners in this endeavor, had their first national conference on this issue right here in Miami-Dade County. And I went over and met with those folks and was able to convince them to give us one of their grants. And in 2000, we held what we call our first mental health summit. And as a judge, it's kind of nice to be able to invite people to meetings because I know they're going to show up. And so I invited all the traditional and non-traditional stakeholders that, in a normal situation, particularly in a criminal system where it's very adversarial, don't talk to each other. But we brought everybody in, and through Policy Research Associates, we brought in three experts. And the first thing that we did at this summit is we mapped out how our criminal justice system intersected with our community mental health system. And what we found out so quickly is that, like most communities, we were embarrassingly dysfunctional. People would get arrested, we'd order a ton of expensive evaluations, and we'd release people who were still incredibly ill right back out to the street, doing nothing to help them with their illnesses, only to see them rearrested relatively soon thereafter. And so it was funny, at some point, you know, we looked at each other in this meeting and we, you know, were trying to figure out who was more sick. You know, people with a real mental illness or us policymaker types that had devised a system that barely worked 9 to 5, 5 days a week, but certainly did not offer the kinds of services that people needed who were so sick. In fact, one of our experts who was from Seattle told us a quick story about how they took a bunch of us, many of the people that would be on this phone today, to a local park, and they took their shoes and their purses and their wallets and their ID and their money, and they said, okay, you have a mental illness. Tomorrow morning, you need to be in court at 9 o'clock. 10:30, you need to go see your probation officer. At 1, you need to see your psychiatrist. And at 3, you need to pick up your medication. And what you realize just by listening to that story without even having to do it is that we created a system that doesn't really work for people who are ill. And so as a result of that process, we actually came up with a wonderful goal. And the goal read, the diversion and linkages to comprehensive care makes jail the last resort. And so what we did is we actually wrote out a cooperative agreement that everybody signed. We created the 11th Judicial Circuit's Criminal Mental Health Project. We gave tours to our policymakers to the jail to show them the conditions of people with mental illnesses in the jail. And we began to collect as much data as possible. In working through one of the universities in Florida, and this is remarkably telling, we asked them to see if they could identify who the highest utilizers of criminal justice and mental health services were in Miami-Dade County. And our idea was if we could just wrap our arms around the people that were accessing most of the services most often, we could get better outcomes, better bang for the buck, and we could spend our dollars more efficiently. Now, realizing that we have such high prevalence of mental illnesses, I thought that we'd get a list of thousands of people back, but at least it would be a place to start. And to my shock and amazement, they sent me a letter, and it contained the names of 97 people, primarily men, primarily homeless, and primarily diagnosed with schizophrenia, who over a five-year period were arrested 2,200 times, spent 22,000 days in the Dade County Jail, and 27,000 days in the Dade County Jail, 13,000 days at an emergency room or crisis facility, cost taxpayers almost $13 million, and accomplished absolutely nothing. We would have been better off sending those folks to Harvard because maybe they would have had a shot at an education. And so what we did as a result of this event and looking at this data is we created both a pre- and post-arrest aversion program. And we set out to train as many law enforcement officers as we could. And this is difficult in a large urban setting like ours. We have 36 separate police agencies with 36 separate governmental entities and 36 separate cultures. But through a grand jury report, a mayor's task force, and a lot of good media, we were able to convince all of our police agencies how important it was, not just for the consumers of mental illnesses, but also for law enforcement officers themselves, that we needed to do this program. And after 15 years, we now have over 4,500 police officers trained in crisis intervention team policing. It is probably the largest CIT force in the United States. In 2013, the two largest agencies, which would be the City of Miami and Miami-Dade County Police, our CIT officers from those two agencies combined handled 10,626 mental health calls. And out of those 10,626 calls, remarkably, those law enforcement officers only made 9 arrests. And as a result of that remarkable turnaround, our jail audit plummeted from about 7,800 to about 4,400. Such a significant reduction that we were able to close one of our main jails 2 years ago, which is an actual cost saving to our county of over $12 million a year. We also realized that some people are still going to get arrested, and we still had to have a more efficient program in place to deal with them when they did. So we went about and we set up 3 post-arrest diversion programs. And so now in Miami-Dade County, if you do get arrested on a misdemeanor and you have a serious mental illness, generally within 24 to 48 hours of identifying the person with the illness, we have them actually physically diverted. They're transported by our Department of Corrections to one of our public crisis stabilization units. I have a team in place that works for the court, including 7 peer specialists. 4 of them graduated from my program. They go over and they meet with these individuals. They start to set up services for them. We get their benefits lined up, and we try to convince them why it's important for them to take treatment. And in about 80% of the cases, the individuals do agree to take treatment. We help them with their housing. We help them get to their appointments. We take everything that they need, all the essential elements that someone with a serious mental illness needs to get into recovery, we help get it to them. We act as boundary spanners. We act as counselors. We act as friends. And we really try to encourage people to get treatment. The recidivism rate of our misdemeanor population with mental illness as a result of this program has actually dropped from a high of about 72% when we started the program 15 years ago to about 20% today. The program worked so well that the state attorney here agreed that we should expand it to nonviolent felony cases. And so we now have a diversion program for people that have been charged with committing low-level felonies that involve no serious violence, although we do include battery on law enforcement and resisting with violence type cases with the permission of the officer, because many unfortunate cases involving people with mental illnesses in the felony division involve those types of charges. That program has been operating for about 5 years. It has been maintaining a recidivism rate over those 5 years of just over 6% for all those that complete the program, which is the vast majority. The program is so successful that in the last 5 years, it's now saving the county between 35 and 40 years of jail bed days. And we also, a couple years ago, started a third diversion program for people who otherwise would have gone to the state hospital for competency restoration. And that's a state-funded program that is benefiting the state pretty much, but it's starting to change the way we look at dealing with people who are incompetent at the time of arrest. Instead of just focusing on restoring their competency so we can quote-unquote try them, which in most cases means just releasing them back to the street with credit for time served, we are now focusing on reintegrating them back into the community. And that program, remarkably, has been maintaining almost a zero recidivism because not only does it offer all the elements of treatment, but it has a remarkable follow-up program so when the person does leave our system, they are followed, maintained, and given the benefits and treatment that they need. The program has grown to include other components. We have a computer system we're working on right now through IBM and Otsuka to see if advanced technologies like predictive analytics can actually help develop a care coordination system. We have a very, very successful program that we do called SOAR, which expedites benefits for people with mental illnesses so we can make sure that our providers get paid for treating this population. We have regular meetings, and our county, working with the state of Florida, was able to get the county, the state, to lease the old state hospital, which is about a mile from the courthouse, for $1 a year for 99 years. And the taxpayers of Dade County passed a $22 million bond issue for us, and we're now in the process of renovating the facility to build what we consider to be the first of its kind in the country. It'll be a forensic diversion facility, so that for a lot of people that still kind of get through the cracks, particularly at bond hearings, we're going to have one facility that'll have a courtroom, crisis care center, a short-term residential facility, a primary health care unit, a day activity program run by people with mental illness, a supportive employment program through a culinary program in this amazing kitchen, trauma services. It'll have all the services under one roof for recovery that people really need. And we are convinced that once we get this building up and running and our predictive analytics are robust by the end of the year, we'll finally begin to have a real grip on this situation and really do what the Supreme Court asked us to do 50 years ago when they ordered deinstitutionalization. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for that, Judge Liefman. It's great to have you on the webinar and to hear about everything that Miami-Dade County has been able to do on this issue.
And if I just add one last comment, I guess a couple lessons that we've learned over the last 15 years is that about 80% of the solution to this problem rests in the local community. And so if you're just waiting for the state or federal government to fix it, it's not going to fix that way. A lot of it requires structural changes that you're already doing in the community. The second lesson is that collaboration works. If you can get all the right partners at the table and show them why it's in everyone's best interest to do this, people will make the structural changes necessary to get the better outcomes. And third, you need good leadership. And that's the beauty of working with NACO, because the commissioners offer that to the community. They also have the ability to get people to the table who otherwise might not come. And so I think this partnership just offers a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to really help resolve a real, you know, national embarrassment where so many people have been hurt as a result of not treating people with mental illnesses.
You were listening to Judge Stephen Liefman from Miami-Dade County. It was a talk that he gave on a recent webinar on May the 14th that is part of the Stepping It Up initiative that was it really began with the National Association of Counties as a response to the problem with over-incarcerating people, especially people with mental illness. That's their focus. Of course, there's also a lot of problems with incarcerating people who just can't afford to bond themselves out and numerous other problems. But there will be a meeting this evening at the Norman Mayer Library in Gentilly. I'll be giving you the details for that as part of the NOLA to Angola weekly prison industrial complex events newsletter calendar. to discuss what we can do at the local level to explore alternatives to incarceration, homelessness, and death for people with mental illness and severe mental illness.